Blog Talk Radio.
She's an award-winning author, an empowerment coach, and speaker. She's also a suicide advocate.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio with your host, Rachel Wright. Very excited today to be here again. Just confirmed last week that I will be hosting the show for the entire month of June. Very excited about that. This has been an amazing opportunity, and I appreciate Candace George and Entrepreneurs Empowering for giving me the opportunity to host. I hope my voice isn't too crackly today. I was actually screaming and shouting for the Washington Capitals. Hashtag all caps. Hashtag Stanley Cup champion. Hashtag parade Tuesday. Just a few congrats to mention. Just wanted to tell you a little bit about my story and my journey through kidney disease. I am a motivational speaker, owner of Rachel Chat, a licensed insurance agent, volunteer, philanthropist, and kidney transplant recipient. Today, I'm going to talk a little bit about kidney dialysis versus kidney transplant. A lot of people have asked me, what's the difference between the two? How did I cope when I was first diagnosed with kidney disease, what were my treatment options, how I was able to travel, what I did in the event of an emergency, a disaster, any type of hazardous weather condition, and the support that I had during my journey from kidney disease. I want to talk a little bit about kidney dialysis. Is actually a machine that filters your blood from your body into a machine, cleanses it of all the waste byproducts, removes out all the water retention in your body, and actually returns it back to your blood. So for a person that does not have kidney disease, their body is able to do that automatically. They do not need any assistance through fluid restriction and maintenance. They're able to do this normally. For somebody that has kidney disease, the kidney dialysis machine serves as their kidney. All the functions that a kidney would do and allows you to maintain a continued healthy lifestyle. The treatment options that are available for kidney dialysis are peritoneal dialysis, which a tube is inserted into the stomach area, and actually intravenous solution is pumped in to cleanse your body. So that is something that you can do at home. With hemodialysis, where you are hooked up to a machine, you can go to an in-center treatment facility, as I did, or what they have available now is home dialysis, where you and a member of your family or you and a member of a nursing agency can actually perform the same treatment you would get in an in-center facility. The only thing is that you're doing it at home in the comforts of your home. The next one is nocturnal dialysis. This is something that's new. It's maybe been on the scene maybe 5 or 6 years. And this is where you can actually sleep during dialysis. So you would go into a facility, maybe like 9 o'clock, and it would be the same as in-center. The only thing, the only thing is you would be hooked up to a machine and you would have the ability to sleep through the entire procedure. So that is an option. For myself, I chose in-center dialysis because I knew I needed a more regimented treatment schedule. I was not able to perform dialysis treatment at home because it was just myself. So for me, the best treatment option was the in-center dialysis. So for me, the in-center dialysis experience, I met with my nephrologist. We discussed the treatment options, decided on the in-center hemodialysis as the best for myself, and then I took a tour of the dialysis center. That was a very enlightening experience, also a very scary experience because the reality of you going to the facility is now upon you. It's a little different when the doctor is telling you, you know, eventually you'll need to go here and these are the steps that we need to take. It's a lot different. You actually pull up to that center and you go in to see the actual machines, the actual people on dialysis, the nurses, the staff. That was a very enlightening experience for me, a little scary because I didn't know what to expect. The doctor and I went over a medication review of the different medications I would need to take as I started on dialysis. Also, the treatment option plan that I would be on dialysis Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 3 days a week. And I would complete a dialysis treatment session lasting for 3 hours. So this meant from 6 o'clock p.m. to 9 o'clock p.m., I would be hooked up to the dialysis machine to cleanse the waste from my body. I was not able to exercise in the beginning. I was able to continue driving. I was able to continue working. But let me stop right there and just say this. Imagine that you're getting up on a Monday, have to be to work at 8:30. Your job is 20 miles away. Get up, let's say 6:30, drive to work. You're there at 8:30. You work a full 8-hour day, 8:30 to 5. Then you get off at 5 o'clock. You're not driving home. You're driving to a dialysis center where you will be hooked up to a machine from 6 to 9 o'clock. Then at, let's say, 9:15, you will travel home where you will get home at approximately, let's say, 10 o'clock. And that will be your day. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, that will be your day weekly. That will be your day monthly. So for me, I would say the hardest part of getting used to this is I was attempting to maintain a work schedule normally that I would do before I started hemodialysis. So for me, I just knew it was something that I had to do. It's not something that I second-guessed about. It's not something that I thought of doing anything else. A lot of people that I saw at the dialysis facility were not working. Unfortunately, they could not work because their energy level was depleted after a dialysis session, so they could not maintain a job. So the role models that I had while going through dialysis, there were not too many that I saw at the facility. But for myself, I knew it was just a normal day. I go back to my first diagnosis and my mother saying, you could do anything that you wanted to do. This was no different. In my family, there wasn't anyone who had dialysis or had any type of debilitating illnesses. I was the only one that was suffering for kidney disease, but I just knew in my family there was a very high standard for maintaining work habits, work-life balance. There was not an option to, you know, be anything but great. You know, the role models that I had were all above average. So for me, it was just something that I knew that I had to do, and it was just one more obstacle that I had to complete. The next challenge that I faced, which was, I would say, the second most eye-opening phase of going through dialysis, was diet. You know, I'd never been one to change a diet, to be on a diet, let alone be told that now the things that you love to eat are harmful to you. So you've got to change your complete way of thinking, your complete diet. I would say one of my favorite things to eat, and a lot of people know this, is Japanese food, sushi. That is like one of my favorite things. So with kidney dialysis, that is something I could no longer eat, with another favorite food, Italian food, pasta, ravioli, that type of thing. I had to change my eating habits. I went on what is called a renal diet, which basically is the restriction of fluid that you intake into your body. Also, you have to be very mindful of certain foods that affect your kidney now that you're on dialysis that your body cannot process. One of those is potassium, so limited amount of bananas. That was a major thing. I used to, you know, have a banana every morning with my meal. No more bananas. Another byproduct that actually filters through your kidneys that they watch for in your lab work is your phosphorus. So anything that is not being broken down through the kidney dialysis phase, you have to be careful of. So I was not only on a renal diet, but I had fluid restriction. I also had high blood pressure, which means I needed to watch the intake of salt. You know, I could not use table salt. I could not use any salt in anything that I was cooking. So those were the two things that really affected me initial on in the diet. And let me just say this. The renal diet is very strict. The most important thing that they're looking at is fluid retention, how much you're drinking, how much you're retaining from, in my case, I was on dialysis Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So when I left on a Monday, how much fluid was I retaining from Monday evening to Wednesday evening? No more than 32 ounces of water. So we're talking maybe, you know, 4 8-ounce glasses of water. But then also you have to take into account soup. Anything that has a liquid, you know, that is considered fluid. And that is something that would be retained in your system and would not be able to filter through your kidneys. So you have to keep that in mind. My first reaction to all of this was, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to do it. All sounds good. All sounds like it's going to cure everything. But first reaction to the doctor was, I don't have to do it. I will be fine. My kidneys will be fine. They will correct themselves. I will not have any issues. And that will be that. So my first phase was just denial. It's not going to happen to me. Even though I'm visiting a treatment facility, my doctor is giving me a medical review, giving me medications, we're touring the facility. Nope, not going to do it. So just denial, not even thinking about a life with kidney disease, even though in the back of my mind, I was thinking about the things that my mother had told me. When I was standing in that facility, that's not what I was thinking about. But I would just say this. When you have a debilitating disease and you know that the only thing that is going to prolong your life is going to be this treatment, in my case, hemodialysis, your attitude changes from denial to acceptance. I'm going to do this. I'm going to be fine. You know, from the day that I walked in there, my faith was tested. I knew that I was going to be okay. I didn't question from then on. I embraced it. And I said, this is not who I am. This Monday, Wednesday, Friday, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., is only a portion of my life. What I want to do with my life is not defined by these 3 hours. And that is something that I would say every day. That is something that would follow me every day as I went to work. Some days when I did not feel like getting up. Some days when I could not get up. Some days when I was there and I felt like I couldn't make it. I made it and I told myself, you will be okay. You will be fine. You may have to do things a little different. You may have to plan a little different. But you will see your way through the other side. I said that every day as I went and traveled down the road to sit 3 hours in a hemodialysis chair. I focused on other things that I was doing, be it classes, being wanting to start my own business, being, you know, reaching out to family members, just other things to realize that there was life outside of that 3 hours. I loved to travel. And one thing I told myself, this will not stop me from traveling. I know in order to plan a trip, even a simple trip that, you know, you probably think, take for granted, you're like, you know what, today is Saturday, I'm going to get up, I'm going to drive to Rehoboth. That's it. I'm just going to pack some clothes. I'm going to drive to Rehoboth. Now, for me, I could not do that. If I wanted to take a day trip, it could not be on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday because I knew that I had hemodialysis. So that's a day that I could not travel. On Tuesday and Thursdays, the days that I was not at dialysis, my energy level may have been down. I was not able to physically travel, to physically drive. So any long-term trips planned had to be planned 1 to 2 months in advance. And let me just give you an idea of how that worked. When I was at the facility, I wanted to travel and visit a friend in North Carolina. I told my doctor 2 months prior that I wanted to take the trip. And he told me he would do a medical review of me, like a mini physical, to see if that is something that I was able to do. Also, he wanted to know how I would be traveling, where I would be staying, was there a medical doctor that I knew, or he could provide one, that would be following up with me, and also what was the nearest hospital to me. So I provided all those things. The doctor then referred me on to the facility planner, and I called and spoke with her and, you know, talked about the desire to travel. And they found me a facility that accepted my insurance that turned out to be only 5 minutes from my friend's house. And so then we began the paperwork. You have to fill out a form saying, why are you traveling? The doctor has to sign to say that it's okay for you to travel. Then all your medical records get sent to the treatment facility of where you're going to visit. They review their records, and they confirm everything with you and your doctor before you can travel. If for some reason it's a long time for them to review everything, to make a decision, you know, if they have a time for you, all that is coordinated through the facility. If there is not an opening, let's say, at the facility, your trip can be delayed. So even though you may have plans to travel, until the facility says it's okay for you to travel, your plans are basically on hold. Your plans are on hold. That's it. You can't travel until they give you a confirmation saying, yes, we have treatment plan for you at the facility. Yes, we're expecting you on this day. And yes, you're okay to travel. So for most people, you know, that's the biggest thing. If you're used to traveling or you're used to taking a, you know, trip or a vacation, you have to think in advance. If I want to go somewhere, let's say it's July, if I want to go somewhere in September, you know that you, from July to September, you should start planning because nothing is guaranteed and it's all depending on the facility. So I know that is a big difference. A lot of people, you know, couldn't wrap their head around it. Like, I don't understand why you can't, you know, just have dialysis on that Friday and then wait till you go. I was like, no, it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. You have to be followed by a doctor during the time that you're traveling. And if you run into something like we had, I think it was either last year or maybe a couple of years ago, where we had all the snow in the D.C. area, they were talking, you know, get prepared because it's going to be one of the worst storms and, you know, make sure you're prepared. For someone that is on kidney dialysis and dependent on a machine to cleanse their body 3 times a week, you have to plan in emergency mode. You have to prepare an emergency kit that you need to have either if you're driving, make sure you have something in your car If you're at home, make sure you have something at home. And what that consists of is you should have a minimum of water and food for 3 days. So let's say you have plenty of food in the refrigerator. You need to set aside a 3-day supply of food, a 3-day supply of water, just for your emergency prepare kit. And then what you want to include in there is like paper towels, you know, plasticware, first aid supplies, you know, make sure you have a flashlight, of course, blanket, that type of thing, and just store that all in a container. For myself, I used to have something in my car. I used to have a flashlight, blanket, and I used to just keep, which I still do now, a case of water in my car, and then some like peanut buttery snacks, that type of thing. Nothing sweet, unfortunately. And I would keep that in my car. Also, you need to have 3 days worth of medications, and then 3 days, what's called an emergency diet. That does not mean Hershey Kisses. That does not mean marshmallows and granolas. You're not on a s'mores alert. You cannot have that. What that means is, and I'll give you an example of the emergency diet that I had to use those last couple of years when we had that big snow and they were saying we wouldn't be able to get out for 2 or 3 days. So my emergency diet, I had to limit the amount of fluid that I took just in case you're unable to, you know, receive dialysis. That you have to be mindful of that. How long am I going to be inside my house, which I'm not able to drive to the dialysis facility? So from day one, my breakfast consisted of, you know, a quarter cup of evaporated milk, you know, which is tasteless. And then you had to do one of those small single-serving boxes of cereal, you know, that you can get at the dollar store or something like that. And then maybe a half cup of canned pears. So that's it for breakfast. So that's your breakfast for the first day. Then for snack, you're supposed to have maybe 5 vanilla wafers, maybe like a half square of graham crackers. So you could have that. So that's your breakfast. That's your snack. And then now you're at lunch. You can have, let's say you want to have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You can have 2 slices of bread, but you can only have 2 tablespoons of butter, 2 tablespoons of jelly. You could still have the canned pears, but you need to drain off that excess juice. So that would be lunch. Let's say you can have the same snack again after lunch. And then your dinner, maybe you want to have a chicken sandwich. So you can have, again, 2 slices of bread, but only, say, a half can of unsalted canned chicken, and then maybe a tablespoon of mayonnaise, and then maybe a half cup of cranberry juice. So right there, that's it. You have that for, let's say, 3 days. That's your emergency diet for 3 days. The main thing to be careful of is during your 3 days, while you're taking this in, you need to make sure that you're not drinking too much fluid, because then what starts to happen is now your fluid level is on overload. Your body has to work extra hard to maintain everything. Your heart's now pumping a little bit harder because you have more fluid on your body. So those are the things that you have to look at when you're on kidney dialysis versus when you get a transplant. For myself, when I got a kidney transplant, it was actually what's called a cadaver transplant, and that was actually from a deceased donor. And how that process works is you're speaking with your doctor on the other treatment options. And for me, I knew about kidney transplant, and, you know, that was my goal. I did not want to live my life Monday, Wednesday, and Friday tied to a dialysis machine. So I sought out other avenues to have a transplant, speaking with my doctor, looking at other hospital facilities such as Washington Hospital Center, which is MedStar Health. I met with a transplant coordinator, and then I met with financial counselor, social worker, just to make sure, you know, you're not crazy, I guess, and then a dietitian, as well as the transplant surgeon. So it's not simple as you want to have a transplant, but all these people play a part in your transplant, and we'll call them your transplant team. They look at all your medical history, talk with your doctor, and see if you're an actual good candidate for a kidney transplant, because there's a lot that entails mentally. Keep in mind that a foreign object, well, I shouldn't say a foreign object, but a foreign organ is coming into your body. There can be signs of rejection. Your body does not want to accept a kidney, which I had. There can be signs of infection because you've introduced something new into your system. So all that plays a part in the overall evaluation of obtaining a kidney transplant. As far as the traveling is concerned, now your traveling is not limited as it was with dialysis. But within the first, for myself, I was in the hospital 1 week, and I could not drive for 6 weeks. And I could not travel for close to a year. Very disappointing because I missed the Baltimore Ravens season opener. I never miss that. But my doctor said, you're not going to that? Too many people. So very cautious on when you're traveling, when you initially have a kidney transplant, because you're very susceptible to infection, somebody has a cold, someone has a sniffle, you know, you're in the grocery store, someone sneezes, you know, near you. So they try to limit the contact that you're having with a large group and a large environment. So I did have to do some pre-planning initially after I got to my 12 months. But the only difference is the pre-planning was more interaction with the doctor, me telling the doctor where I was going, me telling the doctor, am I driving, am I flying, how long I'm staying. No treatment facility involved. So that was a big difference. That did not take any getting used to, and I did have to carry my transplant hospital release document, basically stating that you have had a kidney transplant. This is the facility that is following you, your list of medications, your doctor's name, your transplant hospital, those documents were required that I travel with. So now I am 23 months in. My 2 years will be July 27th of 2018. Celebration, celebration. I would say that if I had the chance to do it over, would I stay on kidney dialysis? Just continue that, or would I have a surgery that lasts about 7 hours and unknown as to what's going to happen, or would I remain on kidney dialysis? For me, there really was not a choice. I knew the lifestyle that I wanted, and I knew the things I wanted to accomplish as a business owner. So for me, it was an easy decision. But you do have people, and I have met people at the dialysis facility that do not want to have a kidney transplant simply because they're afraid of the surgery process of it. So I think the more that I get out there and talk to patients, I'm able to give them a perspective of how it is. I mean, the doctor can say this, this, and this is going to happen. Step one, you're going to go back in. You're going to get anesthesia. This is how long it takes. But it's a little different when someone that has had a kidney transplant can tell you specifically what has happened, specifically how you will feel 24 hours later, how you will feel 48 hours later, how you will feel a week later, how you'll feel going to that first follow-up appointment. When you feel like you, I mean, I couldn't drive for 6 weeks. During that six-week period, I had no desire to drive. I didn't even have a desire to get up off the couch. But I knew every day, rain or shine, I had to get up. It was all a part of the healing process. So little things like that, being a kidney transplant patient, you can speak to other patients and tell them, this was my experience, this was what you can expect, something that the doctor cannot do. My support system that I had early on continued throughout my dialysis treatment, and as I continued on dialysis for 5 years, my support system broadened. I was a very independent person. So for me to ask for help was really a big deal. For me to share my story was really a big deal because I didn't want people to have a perception of, oh, she's sick. That was a fear. I didn't want people to look at me, and I didn't want people to whisper, she's sick. Oh, did you know da da da, she's sick. That was the fear I had in my mind, that nobody would understand what I was going through. So until I was able to break down that wall and actually say to myself, it is going to be fine. People are here to help you. People are here to support you. Until I let that wall down, all the help that I thought I didn't have turned out to be help that I did have, sharing with people, letting them know, hey, I do have kidney dialysis every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I appreciate you asking me how I am. I appreciate you, you know, coming up to me, giving me a hug, just little things that people did throughout the time that I was at dialysis that I'm just so appreciative of. And, you know, I had people at work that I let in about my situation that were very supportive, that I did not give a chance in the beginning, because I had this built up in my mind that they're only going to see me as a sick person. They're not going to see me as the great person that I am. They're just going to see I'm sick. So for me to break down that wall, let people in, was very eye-opening and just so appreciative that I was able to do that. And the outpouring of support that I got was very overwhelming at some times, very overwhelming. And the one thing that I would say that I did, and I encouraged people to do, whether or not you, whoever you believe in, and whatever you think about the world and about your life. One thing that I did that I know took care of me on a day-to-day basis, 24/7, 365, I prayed before I went in that treatment facility. Said a prayer every day, even the days when I wasn't there, for protection, to take care of me, to watch over me, to watch over the people that were in there, and to watch over the people that were not receptive to treatment, were having a bad day. And I will tell you, that is the thing that got me through. When days when I thought I would not make it, I made it. You know, I came through the other side. And that is one of the reasons that I talk to patients, talk to anyone that will listen. You know, this past week, you see people that suffered in silence with depression, mental illness, and no one knew anything. So I would say, anything that you're going through, reach out to someone. You'd be very, very surprised who will be willing to share their story with you and how your story can actually help someone else. It really can. I mean, I can't say enough about my support system that I had, not only at home, but, you know, support system that I had from different people at Washington Hospital Center who I've known for a long time, that helped me through initially on, that still continue to check on me and help me. And, you know, I can't say enough about the people that supported me. So next week, hopefully we will have on one of my friends who is a dietitian. She may talk a little bit about kidney disease and the diet. And so hopefully she can go over that. So let's hope to have her on next week. So excited. I'm going to be here for the entire month of June. So stay tuned for next Saturday. And if you want to have me speak at your event, your business, or partner with you for an event, you can always contact me at www.rachelchats.com. You can do that. Or you can contact me on Twitter at Rachel Chats, or contact me on Instagram at Rachel W. Chats. Give me a call, 301-693-7792. Also, I'm going to put the link up today. If you weren't able to listen into the show today, you can always replay it later and listen to it. I just want to thank everyone for listening to the show today. Thank you to Candace George at Entrepreneurs Empowering for letting me host the show. And everyone, just have an amazing week and be right.